Ideas Coffee Break for Wednesday, September 10th, 2008.
On this week's edition of the ITS Coffee Break, we will talk about the library website facelift, updates to iTunes U service for this semester, and a new collaborative space in development for faculty collaboration. In tech news, we'll talk about Google Chrome and Twitter searches.
Welcome to the ITS Coffee Break. My name is Ken Newquist.
And I'm Courtney Bentley.
And we're not dead.
We're not dead. And we remember our names. And this is miraculous.
It is kind of astounding because it's been a really busy summer for us.
It's been a busy summer and it's been a super busy start to this semester.
Yeah. I think today is the first day where things have felt a little bit relaxed. Thus, the reason why we're doing the podcast.
That's right.
Because we can breathe.
We can. And there are not lines of people outside of our offices.
Yeah, so I guess the first reason why I've been so ridiculously busy this summer was the library website redesign. Actually, the whole library web presence has gotten a facelift. So
that's right.
It's pretty nifty. You can now. Well, I guess the first thing is that the library website and the library catalog have been split into two. They're kind of like this unholy combination. Previously, where you had the catalog on www.library.lafayette.edu, and then you had like some of the pages over on www2. Well, now we have libcat or libcat, depending on
who you talk to.
But I say libcat because there isn't an e in there. But anyway, libcat.lafayette.edu is the new catalog server location, and then the library website is library.lafayette.edu. So it's a whole new look. It's powered by Drupal, just like the ITS website. And I gotta say, I think it looks better than the ITS site.
Yeah. I mean, you can definitely see that the ITS site is aged a bit.
Yeah. I mean, it's, and it takes advantage of a lot of really cool tricks. It's one of those things where there's been a lot of work done behind the scenes to make it kind of look simple on the front end, but like research tools are making use of really cool things like content construction kit and views and just doing some really fun stuff. So I can't wait to come back to the ITS site and use some of those same things there.
Right. So for those of you who may not realize, because some of this stuff isn't really evident on the surface to people, the whole library website used to be maintained by, I guess, Bob and some of the reference librarians manually, which means that every single page was a separate HTML page and things were hard-coded in. And so now by using Drupal, which is a content management system, things can be updated more fluidly. The content gets grabbed in different ways so that when you search, you're really doing a really powerful search on the content itself.
So. Yeah, it's pretty cool. And we were able to do things like import the research tools database into Drupal itself and then use these things called views to basically take all of these, like for example, you have a whole bunch of anthropology-related research tools. Well, you can use views to take all of the entries for that and display them on the page. And it's just very nice.
It is.
It was a lot of work, but it was very nice.
And besides the great facelift, I really appreciate all the hard work that everyone put into it.
Yes, yes, yes. But the
part that excites me most is that you can now access resources using your network ID and password instead of your L number.
And I can't claim any responsibility for this because Drupal didn't do that. But
right.
It is pretty cool. So for any of those, any of you who've ever had to use the proxy or wanted to renew your stuff from home and
who've had to get up and go find your ID card because you don't remember your L number like some people, me.
Probably. Most people. So yeah, you don't have to do that anymore. You can just use your network ID, which is a pretty big deal. Now the catalog pretty much looks like the catalog always has, but I know that Jason Alley, one of our colleagues, and Bob Duncan are going to be doing some tweaks on that. So hopefully we can make it look a little bit more like the regular library website. But all in all, a very worthwhile project and pretty cool. I had a lot of fun with it. It was a lot of work, but it was very worthwhile. So let's see. The other thing we are kicking around for the fall semester is something we're calling Spaces.
Yeah. So basically, this would be a collaborative workspace primarily for faculty, but I guess we could conceivably incorporate student groups. And basically, what this would do would be it would be a Moodle installation, and we would enable Shibboleth, which we've talked about Shib before on here, but just to remind everyone, Shibboleth is an authentication mechanism whereby you can authenticate using your own credentials on other systems. So, for instance, someone from Oberlin or McAllister or Smith College could log into Spaces using their credentials from their institution, and it would know who they were.
Right, so this then the problem this solves is people at different institutions wanting to work together, but not necessarily having a good space to do it. So with this, as long as they're using Shibboleth, and there's actually a third-party provider who will give you a SHIB ID that you can use if your institution isn't doing it. But I got to say, a lot of our peer institutions are using Shibboleth now, and I think a big driver for that was Gmail, because Google accepts Shibboleth. But in any case, Spaces is going to be its own thing. It's going to be separate from Moodle. We're probably going to put it up at spaces.lafayette.edu, or rather, we will. We're just working out the behind-the-scenes stuff, and it's probably not going to be available until sometime in October. But the idea is we're just going to put it over there as a sandbox. People could experiment with it. I don't know if we'll ever activate Shibboleth on Moodle proper, because there's a whole bunch of different issues involving well, just data, student IDs, that kind of stuff that we'd have to work through. But the idea is Spaces just gives you, well, a sandbox to play in. And when people come to us and say, hey, I want to be able to do this, we can say, well, we have a solution for you.
Right.
So pretty cool.
So if you have a research group that you work with who's sort of spread out all over the country and you think that the Moodle platform would be a good one to use, feel free to contact Ken or I and we can put you on our list of pilot people and see what we can do for you.
Yeah, and I guess that's the other thing we just need to note is that it is a pilot.
Right.
So this is just an experiment to see how well it works. And after we get through, well, probably this semester and next with it, we'll see how it shook out and if we want to continue doing it this way, if we want to fold it into Moodle proper, or if we want to incorporate some of this stuff into Moodle and just keep it maintained as two separate things. I like the idea of having it as its own thing because then it's just easier to manage and
Right.
anyway. The other kind of project that's still technically, I think, in pilot, I don't know that we officially took it out of pilot, is iTunes U. And for some reason, this semester, everybody's using it. I don't know if I can accurately say everybody, but there's a lot of people
Yeah,
using it this
there
semester.
is a nice handful of people.
So John Drummond in biology is using it to distribute videos for his biology labs. We've got some folks in music who are using it. Policy Studies is going to be using it to post some videos for lectures and podcasts and stuff. And it's just, I'm excited because it's cool. I just wasn't anticipating this mad rush for people to use iTunes. So as a result of that, what I've done is I wrote a little script that takes some of the pain out of doing enrollments in iTunes U. Before, it wasn't really scalable. Like, I would add people to iTunes so that they could access their classes, and it was okay because there were only a handful of people using it and only a couple students doing it, and it wasn't a big deal. But when we had John with seven sections, eight sections of lab,
Yeah, something like that.
that's like 200 students. That's more than I can easily manage. So what I did was I wrote a script that basically syncs up the iTunes enrollments with the Moodle enrollments, and it goes and it
Which are
sees.
syncing with the banner enrollments.
Right, but more on that much later in the
Yes.
show. But in any case, so basically somebody gets added to a course in Moodle, and boom, they get added in iTunes. And the nice thing about this is that people can then use Moodle to manage their access to iTunes if they're teaching a course or if they're in an organization or whatever. So if you're interested in using iTunes, it's still technically a pilot. Maybe at the end of the semester it could come out of pilot, but there's a couple of other things I'd like to do before we do that. One of which would be iTunes slash Moodle integration so that you could maybe get a list of tracks that are available in Moodle or in iTunes in your Moodle course and just make it easier for people to use. But in any case, if you're interested in it, drop me an email. I'd be happy to work with you. So in tech news this week, Audacity has changed some of their preferences, which we're
Yeah.
discovering as we go through this
Well, we're discovering
podcast.
because Ken decided to blow his computer up this week, and so now he's reinstalling everything.
Yeah, so I installed the beta 1.3.4.0.1 beta of Audacity, and it does some things differently. And one of the things it does differently is when you import the audio tracks, such as our little teasers, it just starts and you go to start recording, it plays the previous track instead of muting the previous track, which I think is what it did before.
It did.
So, yeah.
So we'll need to find that setting.
This is one of the reasons why, like we were just talking about before, this is one of the reasons why we do a podcast, so we can try stuff out and break it before we have to teach it to you.
Yeah.
So speaking of trying new things out, like that segue.
Yeah, that's a good segue.
So we haven't lost it.
This is true.
But anyway, Google Chrome.
So I don't know how many of you have been paying attention, but this has been hot topic of discussion all over the web.
Yeah, Twitter's been pretty much...
All a buzz
about Chrome as people dissect it. I mean, I'd hate to release like a major project like this. And nowadays, it's just like people are instantaneously dissecting it live on Twitter.
Yeah, it kind of makes my skin crawl to think about that.
Yeah, so anyway, Google Chrome is a new web browser. It is Google's very own web browser. There had been speculation for years that they were going to release their own web browser. And for the most part, they had been content just to do Firefox. And so they've had deals with Firefox where they would promote it on their site and such.
But don't you think that this is probably preemptive to the phone coming out?
I don't know.
I mean, I tend to think
it could be because they probably have their own special phone, special browser on Android.
I mean,
right?
I kind of tend to think that Chrome is probably in development to support Android.
Well, and it makes sense,
too,
given the minimalist interface of this browser. So basically, to back up a second, they have their own browser. It's open source. And basically what it is they've made it as streamlined as possible. They've cut out a lot of extraneous stuff. There's not a lot of extra buttons, very minimalist tabs. And I think that's a lot of what people have been complaining about. And I think it's the power users in Firefox, you know, the people who are most likely to try this out go, well, I can do this, 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 and this in Firefox. Well, yes, but this isn't Firefox. So I don't know if it's a legitimate complaint. Chrome seems to do okay. I've played with it a little bit. One of the things that's kind of interesting is when you load it up, and unfortunately, folks, this only works on Windows. There isn't a Linux or Mac version yet. But when you load it up, it keeps track of the pages you've been to. And then when you relaunch the browser, your home page is a list of the pages you've been to, like little screenshots of the pages that you've been to or the sites you've been to most recently.
You know, I don't do weird stuff on the internet, but that would kind of freak me out.
Yeah. I'd rather just have my Google Home as my Google Home. Because I don't... Yeah.
Yeah, that would make covert missions rather difficult.
There is, though, from what I understand, a private browsing mode where you can not have it track what you're doing. Safari has something similar where you have a private browsing where it will show up in your history and that kind of stuff.
Right.
But, of course, you have to remember to turn it on.
Yes. Yes.
So, in any case, it's interesting. You can go check it out. There was just a bit of a huge blow-up over it yesterday, I guess, in academic circles, because there was as part of the terms of service, from what Google says, they just kind of, like, took one of their existing terms of service and slapped that thing right on Google Chrome. And one of the things in there was basically anything viewed, submitted, or whatever by Google Chrome becomes the property of Google, which is like basically the whole web that browsed.
Yeah,
everything
that's
you browsed,
neat.
They were saying. Oh,
so that's like if I upload pictures using Flickr within Chrome, those pictures are now the copyright of Google.
All your base art belong to us. To which Google then said, "Sorry, we didn't mean to do that." We won't be evil, and they remove that section and now say anything you do with the browser remains yours.
Well, thank you.
Which is pretty much what they wanted to do in the first place. But so, I mean, check it out. I can't say it blew me away. It was pretty fast. I will say that. I think it was faster than Firefox.
Well, if it's minimalist, then it should be.
Yeah. But... there was one person I saw who was on Twitter who was complaining about it because of the way it manages flash memory. And Firefox apparently has the same issue. So if you have 50 or 60 browser windows open at the same time, and each of them is running a Flash application, they'll slow your computer down to a crawl. Internet Explorer apparently does not have this problem, to which I said, you may have some multitasking issues if you have 50 or 60 browser tabs open simultaneously.
That are all running Flash.
Yeah. I mean, I understand needing to test stuff, but come on, 50?
Mm-hmm.
50? So, check it out. If nothing else, it gives you a glimpse of some new technology that's coming down the pipe, and it could be something that could be showing up pretty soon. I did check Moodle using Chrome, and it works. The only thing that doesn't work is the WYSIWYG editor, which is the same as Safari. So, personally, I don't like the WYSIWYG editor in Moodle, so it didn't bother me. But I know some people like it. So.
Yes.
Now, in other tech news, we have Twitter search. Have you tried this?
No.
So let's say you want to know what people are talking about on Twitter, or you want to see if people are talking about a particular thing. So let's say we had, was it Palin is the Republican vice president, right? Huge amount of stuff going on Twitter regarding her. If you do this will allow you to do a search and say, okay, what have people been talking about? So here we go. If you type one.
And it even gives you a list of trending topics. So there kind of go. Like the top stuff that's being talked about, which Chrome and Google Chrome and McCain and RNC and Obama and GOP and NFL.
NFL because everybody's doing their fantasy football drafts, right?
Everyone
and
except for me.
Preseason, but.
But yes.
We could have our own iTech fantasy football league.
We could, yeah.
We wouldn't actually have any time to do it.
No.
But if only there was a way we could, well, yeah. We don't think any of us like football enough to do that. But anyway, it's pretty interesting. I think it provides something that Twitter kind of needed, which was a way of kind of data mining what's in it. They bought another company in order to be able to do this. And so far, it looks pretty cool.
Yeah, this is very cool.
So it's if you use Twitter a lot or you're just trying to get a sense of, you know, what people are talking about, I would definitely check it out. I think it's also useful when you know people are twittering about a particular topic and you just want to get a sense for what people are saying outside of your own peer group.
That's right. So you journalism writing students who have Hevranek, you should take advantage of this
search.
That's
right. We were actually just talking about this last week with Carrie, which was how do you find new people on Twitter? And for me, it's been a very kind of organic process where I follow somebody who followed somebody else because I saw them come up in my tweet stream. But this provides an entirely different way. And if you were doing a research topic, like on political science, this is a good way to find people who are tweeting about that kind of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
So.
Very cool.
Yeah. So next up, we want to talk a little bit about Moodle and courses in Moodle and enrollments in Moodle.
That's right. Because this seems to be a mystery to people. Sometimes even us. So we just want to let you in sort of behind the curtain.
Right. So where to begin? I guess the first thing that people should know is that at the beginning of every semester, well, actually long before the beginning of every semester, we create every course at Lafayette in Moodle. You can't see them, but they're there. If you're a faculty member, then you can see them. Your courses are visible to you, but hidden to all of your students. So in order for students to be able to see courses, they have to be unhidden by their faculty members.
Yes.
We do it this way because if we didn't, then a lot of students could start interacting with courses that maybe their teacher didn't actually want to use Moodle for. So anyway, all the courses exist. Then probably about a month before the beginning of school, we start loading the enrollments into the system. And we then do periodic add drops where we add additional, adds and drops to the system, right? So students get enrolled into courses, they get removed from courses.
Now, all this information, mind you, is stored in Banner.
Right.
Banner is the of record. So if you add or drop in Banner with the registrar's office, that is the information that we are using.
And I think this is where the conundrum kind of comes into play.
I believe it is.
This is going to be something that we're just going to have to work through as a community. Now, we did have a bit of a snafu last week with regards to a bunch of people who are waitlisted showing up because of, Banner data. But we quickly got rid of those and cleaned everything up. We were attempting to fix an earlier problem, which made it a little bit worse for a short period of time and hopefully fixed everything. But in any case, everything's back on schedule now and AdDrop is running. And because we're going off of Banner, the challenge is that we have to wait until the registrar has had a chance to submit that information into Banner, which means that they're waiting for you to turn in your forms. So just because someone signed a form doesn't mean that you're instantly into Moodle. It has to kind of go through the whole workflow.
That's right.
We do add drop once a day, usually in the morning. So it can take about 24 hours from the time that the registrar submits your information until you show up in Moodle. Let's see, anything else you want to add on that note?
Well,
I guess in terms of problem solving, right?
Right. Well, I mean, the other thing, the other issue that we've seen, you know, particularly in the beginning of the semester, is that students sort of have the impression still that all of their courses should show up in Moodle.
Right.
And that's not the case. It's up to the faculty member to determine if they're going to use it or not and when they're going to make it available. So just because a course isn't showing up in your My Courses block doesn't mean you're missing something.
Right. So the My Courses block is not your roster. Now, I mean, one of the thoughts that I had, and we're, I'd be love to hear people's feedback on this, is, you know, would it be useful to display the courses that people are enrolled in as an unclickable link so that students could see what courses they're enrolled in Moodle, even if the teacher isn't using it? So only the ones that are hyperlinked would go anywhere. But then otherwise you would say, Moodle also is aware of these courses or something like that. I don't know if that would create more confusion than it would solve or what.
Well, it would just mean that everyone's My Courses block would be enormous.
Yeah, it could get a little big. So, I mean, these are the these are the issues we have to deal with. So,
right.
I guess so. The question is, if you're in a course and you're not, you can't see that course in Moodle, the first thing you should do is talk to your teacher and say, "Are you using Moodle?" If they are using Moodle and you're not showing up in the course, well, then call the help desk and let them know what the course number is and what the section number is, and then we'll see what's going on and we can add you into the course if you're allowed to be in the course. And by that, it has to be, it all goes back to Banner. So for us, we have no way of knowing whether or not you're supposed to be in the course, and we have to go off against what Banner tells us. So it's important to turn in your paperwork in a timely manner.
That's right. So we do hope to move to a system by which the data from Banner gets updated more than once a day. So hopefully it will be more automagical rather than Ken having to actually run it manually.
Right. So, I mean, it's halfway automagical now.
Yeah.
But we have something that actually Bates College is doing already with Banner Moodle integration that shows some promise. So we're hoping to work on that in October and be able to possibly use it for a January term. But we also have to work through the implications of greater automation to the system. So.
That's right.
Let's see. Anything else we want to talk about on Moodle?
No, I think that's enough for now.
So we're talking about backups. I think this is a good time to mention it. Because it's early in the semester and people have an opportunity to learn from my misfortune. Which is to say, you got to back up your stuff. This is just a general help tip, but back up your stuff. My Mac gave me a heart attack earlier this week because it decided it didn't want to boot. And fortunately, Amy Jordan, who is, well, she's pretty much a goddess when it comes to the whole Mac thing, was able to get my hard drive to come back up using a program called Disk Warrior, which was very cool. And I did have backups. It's just that they weren't as current as they should have been. They were, I think, about 2 months out of date, which would not have been the end of the world because I have my files in a variety of different places and I could easily have gotten back up to speed again, but it would have been a pain to lose stuff. And some things like, licensed software, that kind of thing, would be a real pain to have to restore. So for students and faculty as well, you know, think about what's going to happen if you're going to lose your projects. You know, do you have it backed up? And do you have it backed up in multiple places if it's really important?
Right. And remember, too, just as another word of wisdom, sending copies of your files to yourself in email is not really a backup.
Right.
Because those files easily become corrupted, and you don't want that to be your only copy of your midterm paper, and it's corrupt, and there's nothing we can do to help you.
So there's a couple different options. You could use your U Drive, which is your personal space at Lafayette, which is backed up nightly. So that at least has a tape backup that you could conceivably receive the file from, even if you, or get the file back from, even if you deleted it off of your U Drive. You could get a FireWire drive, which is what I'm doing in my office. And then both Windows and the Mac have ways of automating backups to a FireWire drive. Let's see, what else could you do?
Did you say flash drive? I kind of zoned out.
I did not say flash drive.
So like a little USB memory flash drive thing that you put on your keychain or you keep in your backpack or whatever.
The important thing there is to make sure that that doesn't become your only copy.
Yes.
Because we've seen that happen more than once. Yes. Where people have lost their flash drive and then lost
everything,
which is not good. Or thrown it in the dryer, washing machine.
Yeah. Mine did survive a wash and dry, but
we don't encourage
I was very
you to...
fortunate, and I don't encourage it.
So my advice is just a backup. I mean, it costs $100, $200 to get a FireWire drive nowadays, but it is completely worth it.
Absolutely.
And this goes double, you know, for your purchased music. If you're in, like, iTunes and you like the simplicity of buying music, well, you know, if your computer goes belly up, you probably aren't going to be able to get that music back. Sometimes Apple will allow you to download it again, but their default answer is that they won't. So back up frequently.
Absolutely. So I guess the last thing in help news is just to note that we will be posting a workshop schedule for September. And you can look forward to some Moodle gradebook, some Openio, a little bit of Photoshop, and some iMovie. So for those of you who may be considering working on election night broadcast, little mini recorded segments, join us for an iMovie workshop so that we can sort of get you up to speed and help you to get ready for that.
Very cool. We are always looking for feedback on the show, so you can send it to us at itsblog@lafayette.edu.